Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is April 15th. So today on the show, a woman who should have been one of my very first guests and on the show several times since, Dana Martin. Dana is an author and a very sought after speaker and presenter on the topic of unschooling. She founded the organization Unschooling United, and she is also the author of the book Radical Unschooling, A Revolution Has Begun. We sat down via Skype Friday afternoon to have our very first conversation, certainly not our last. And the night before, she had actually appeared, or the episode that she appeared on aired for the first time, ABC's Wife Swap. And this is a show where two families switch moms for a period of 2 weeks, and the mother spends the first week with the other family observing, and then in the second week, they get to kind of rewrite the other mother's rules. And they usually, to generate excitement and drama on the show, pick families who are pretty opposite in their functioning, and that was the case here. So I wanted to just, since we do talk about this for a while on the show, I want to lay some groundwork by playing you a clip of this episode of ABC's Wife Swap with the Martin family, and then we'll get right into our discussion. This was really great, and we will definitely do it again. I look forward to your feedback. Thanks for listening. More stuff coming soon.
Tonight on Wife Swap, two very different wives.
I think schools are like prisons.
A free-thinking radical whose children have never been to school.
Unschooling is the belief that learning happens just through living life, and learning is like breathing.
Our 11-year-old daughter has started to teach herself how to read through texting.
And a strict, by-the-book disciplinarian.
Do that look neat to you?
Order is a part of our lives.
She'd have made an excellent drill sergeant.
Swap lives for 2 weeks.
That is just nasty, unclean, unhealthy.
Sounding an alarm, that felt so cruel.
At 13, allowing them to make this type of decision is just not very good parenting.
You're choosing cruelty over kindness with your own children, your own children.
But when they change the rules, their worlds are turned upside down.
No school.
Your game is over, buddy.
There's no
it's
rules.
My turn.
So who that's here has never been to Jory's house before.
Killing all them germs up there.
And what with my iPad?
If you set that off, you're out of here.
Yeah, I'm really scared, Joe.
And when the wives finally come face to face, tempers explode.
No, I'm not going to
do it. Good, take your ass out of here, loser.
First up is the free-thinking Martin family from Madison, New Hampshire. Mom, Dana, Dad, Joe, 13-year-old Devin, 11-year-old Tiffany, 8-year-old Ivy, and 4-year-old Orion.
In our family, we don't live by rules. You know, there's six of us. We're all equal. All of our needs are respected. There's no hierarchy. It's true freedom on a level most people don't realize.
My family is weird.
Our family are radical unschoolers. I think schools are like prisons. It's one of the most unjust things to do to institutionalize a kid. I am an advocate in the unschooling movement. I've written a book called Radical Unschooling.
Under New Hampshire state law, the Martin kids are legally homeschooled.
I've been unschooled my entire life, and I've never been to one day of school.
I learn and play when I'm home.
Our 11-year-old daughter, Tiffany, has slowly started to teach herself how to read through texting.
I can't really read books yet.
Our income comes mainly from our home-based business, where we craft wooden toy kitchens and play stands.
You're it.
Every day's summer vacation here. Every day's a weekend, and life can be that way. We stay up much later than traditional families. If our kids want to jump on the trampoline at 1 or 2 in the morning, they totally can.
Living 3,000 miles away in suburban San Diego, California, is the Avery Lamb family. Super strict on-the-go mom Cindy, dad Andre, 17-year-old Jory, and 11-year-old Naja.
Well, good morning.
I'm pretty strict on my kids. Dry and clean.
My mom is the one who's running the show in this house.
Time for room check. Let's check out what you got. Do that look neat to you?
She'd have made an excellent, I think, Marine or drill sergeant.
What's going on with the closet? Why are the shoes right there instead of on the shoe rack?
Want to try it again?
While Cindy gives her kids a long list of chores, she keeps them on a very short leash.
Being a 17-year-old in my house is kind of difficult. I can't remember the last time I've even been to the mall to hang out with friends.
B minus? Y minus? That's close to a C.
Education is very important to us. You can go a lot further in your life if you have education. By the time you graduate, you should be at least an A student.
I hope so.
And I'm always pushing them for that A if I can get it out of them. Besides running the house, I do hair. I have a salon inside of my home.
How was your day?
I'm a banking officer at a local community bank here in the San Diego area.
It's important for my kids to leave their bedroom doors open unless they're getting dressed or playing music. I want to know what my kids are doing and not making bombs in their bedrooms.
First of all, I'm sorry it took me so long to reach out to you. I don't know why. I think I was saving it for like a special occasion, but it never came. So I guess you just had one, the release of this show, and that will work for us.
Yeah, well, this is my first interview since the show's aired. So it's pretty special occasion, actually.
And we're talking about ABC's Wife Swap, which I believe had its genesis on the Chappelle Show. I don't know if you
really
remember. Dave Chappelle did a skit where he said, wouldn't it be funny if someday instead of, house swap, they people actually swapped wives. And then it seemed like the network executives within a year or so said, yeah, let's really do that show. And it became one of the biggest reality shows that there is, actually. You were on it. I'm guessing that was recorded a while ago, right? But it just aired last night.
Yeah, well, they contacted us last July. I was actually having a teen unschooling gathering at our house. And at 10 at night, the phone rang and it was a casting company and asking if we wanted to be part of the show. And I said, well, it sounds exciting. Let me talk it over with my family. If I have to make sure all my kids are on board and wanting to do it, or we're not really interested. So we chatted with the kids for a couple days and told them the full scope of what it would mean to be on, and that they would have a mother that was completely opposite of me, and all those details that, to the best of our knowledge, and they all decided that they wanted to go for it. So we filmed it in October, the end of October. I flew to San Diego and she flew out here, and it all began from there.
Well, that was the first question that I had, because when I saw the promo a couple days ago, I was pretty scared for everybody involved, mostly on your side, not so much of the other mother, but of the way that it was going to be presented on television. And I was really happy that when it came to an end, I just finished watching it before we started, you really emerged as the protagonist. And I was worried through, clever editing and cutting up footage that they were going to paint a different picture of your family. And even though this is the first time we've had the opportunity to speak, I certainly know a lot about you. And I also know that, you have a lot of publicity. You're an author, you're a conference organizer, you're a speaker, you're attachment parenting coaching. You do all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you've found yourself in the mainstream media several times. I'm wondering how you prepare your children for something like that. Because I think there's a lot of people who follow your work and take suggestions from your site, but they find themselves completely surrounded by mainstream folks who look at this as bizarre. So what do you do to prepare your children for the scrutiny of other people? Like, what happens in this situation?
Well, it's interesting because this isn't something I ever planned. Like, I never even knew that we'd be involved in the media. It happened 7 years ago. I was on a message board for homeschooling and somebody posted that Dr. Phil was looking for homeschoolers to be on the show, and they posted a link. Well, I just clicked on the link and just for fun, wrote the 4-page questionnaire, filled it out, and told my husband jokingly, oh, when Dr. Phil calls, we're going to go and be on a show. And we never thought of it again. Well, a month later, the phone rang. And sure enough, they filmed us and we were flown out and had the experience, our first media experience with the Dr. Phil show. Since that time, we've never contacted the media once. Once you're out there, people find you. And so because of the Dr. Phil show, it led to other experiences on Nightline with Juju Chang. My son and I, Devin, were on the Jeff Probst show. We've been on Fox News with John Taylor Gatto and Pat Ferenga. We've done a lot of stuff. And I've, for the last 7 years, we've been kind of working with this. And we've just grown up alongside of our children, learning how to deal with this as we go. My kids love it. Devin, especially, my older son, he looks at himself like an advocate himself for this life. And they really are proud of all that we've done. And we've never faced it with fear. I think there's a huge difference in attitude. I don't think you can go into this at all a really pessimistic, negative, fearful person. Like, we've always had complete trust in the process and our path, despite even being criticized by others in the unschooling community that we're not advocating correctly, according to them.
What does that mean? Why do they say that?
Well, because no one's ever done this before. No one's ever advocated through using the media. And, you know, the exciting thing is we are using the media for our advantage to get the word out about freedom and children and what children, you know, deserve and respect. And over time, I have seen it shift. I've seen it shift in the media where it was so opposed and looked at as crazy. And every interview we do, it gets more and more acceptable. So it's like this human evolution is happening on some level with awareness. And, yeah, it's really awesome to be part of it. So how do we prepare our kids? Well, before Wife Swap aired, we all chatted together. I talked to them about Facebook and social media and not to accept any new friend requests without, you know, letting us see them and those kind of things. That if you get any strange messages, just don't respond. Mom and Dad will check them out. And they put their privacy settings up a little bit. And so those kind of things. But the amazing thing is, Brett, is we haven't had barely any negative. I mean, it's only been, mind you, 12 hours since the show aired. Mm-hmm. Very, very little negative response. Overwhelming positive response to this show. It's incredible.
Anything stand out?
Anything negative? Just that our kids are never going to be able to work in society. Just the basic. I mean, I think unschoolers get used to the basic kind of criticisms and fears mm-hmm. that our kids are never going to be able to function outside of our home. And most of them are like stereotypes of homeschoolers in general about their socialization and so nothing that has any that I haven't heard before or dealt with.
What about the positive? Anything new?
I can't even keep up with it, to be honest. I had no idea it would be this big. I had to turn Facebook off. It was just so many messages have come through, hundreds and hundreds of emails and messages, and all of which are just thanking us for bringing this to their awareness, for people that were needing more courage or support, people that feel really bad for the other kids. And it is challenging for me. I hadn't seen the end of the show until everybody else did. We did see a preview the night before it aired, actually, which I thought was really awesome of the network to send to us. But I did cry pretty hard when I saw her come in and tell little Najia that she had to take her art down. It was just so sad because she was so happy to hang it. I mean, I connected with these kids so deeply. I was with them. I was their mother for 2 weeks. And when cameras weren't on, I mean, I was there with them, meals, helping them get ready for school. And I mean, it was just a really connected role for me. And we bonded a lot. And on the other end, she was basically just crew. You know, she just came and filmed when the crew was here. So my family never really had the same experience.
Yeah. Yeah, the juxtapositions, again, I know there's a whole production process here, so you can't see the real story. But the juxtapositions going from San Diego to your house in New Hampshire when the swap was taking place, it would just go back and forth between being so touching, like your interactions with those children and seeing what they needed and seeing that fulfilled, you know, so quickly. That's a tremendous feat to make such a meaningful connection in an environment like that, considering the way those children had been parented in a period as short as 2 weeks. And then to cut back to New Hampshire, and it was so heartbreaking to see your children having to interact with that woman. And, you know, my heart went out to the husband, the San Diego family. He seemed very meek and permissive. As far as the wife was concerned, and gosh, to your husband too, Joe, what a terribly difficult situation he seemed to be in, but especially the children.
It was hard to see. I mean, can you imagine, like, from July until October, the amount of discussions that we had as a family about how to handle this? And I would say to Joe, promise me that the kids won't do anything that they don't want to do. And the production company was very much aware of our philosophy. You know, people warned me about going on the show. Friends and family were supportive, but of course you hear they're going to make you look crazy and don't do it. And I always just move forward in trust. And this production company was amazing. Zodiac is the name of the company that created it. It's a brand new production company. Wife Swap hasn't been on the air for a couple of years. And so they're bringing the show back. It's produced totally differently. It's not as hokey as it used to be. It's really well done. Like, I'm so impressed with the integrity. They respected our kids' wishes to a T. Like, my daughter Tiffany, who's 11, she does know how to read, by the way, so I do want to add that. On the show, she was sharing that she doesn't really read books yet, but she does know how to read and write fluently. It kind of was a little skewy at that point, but if that was the worst that it's going to get, I'll take it. But she actually has read a book since that episode, since the episode aired. The amazing thing was she did not want to be microphoned. So like when the crew would get here in the morning, they'd mic everybody up. It was kind of a routine you'd get used to, you'd get mic'd up, and she just didn't want to be mic'd up. And so they were so cool and respectful of her autonomy and her decision that they literally had a mic guy following her around with a boom mic for 12 to 14 hours a day, you know, much to whatever she wanted to do. When she said, I don't want to be followed or I don't want to be filmed, they utterly respected the kids. They loved our philosophy. It was amazing. The crew said to us that they had never heard anything like it and they thought it was amazing. You really bond with these people. I mean, you're living with a crew of 12 in both homes. You know, I had at least 12 people out in San Diego and they had 12 here. And these guys, you know, mostly all young men in their 20s, become like family to you. And they were so cool. So you're seeing like these families interact. Little do you know that in the background, there's all these people and lights and cameras, and it's a really amazing experience. So I was really grateful for being able to do
it. It was that short promo that I saw a couple days ago that actually led to that question of how do you prepare your children for the exposure and the scrutiny, because they had cut that clip that you mentioned where your daughter says, I don't really read, like 3 seconds where you can kind of hear there's context on either side of that, but it's cut to that to be provocative. But you're right. I mean, I found the show to be very respectful and otherwise, and it is different than what I had seen or what my idea of the show was from earlier. And I wondered that about reality TV, if they were saying, you know, okay, let's over exaggerate, let's overdo things a little bit. It seemed like the other mother had gotten that kind of coaching when she shows up to give your children new rules in a military uniform. That seemed like theater to me.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I know on my end that nothing was prompted other than, okay, now why don't we make dinner? You know, like they had to have some kind of organization, but as far as scripted, I was never told what to say. And my husband said he never was either. So it really was reality with the highest integrity that I've ever seen. And when the show came out, I was blown away how real it was. Like, I was so happy. I was so relieved. There was so much that happened that wasn't shown. I mean, they filmed for 2 weeks and for 20 minutes to come out. I'm really glad some of it wasn't shown, because she's a Zumba instructor. So I had to like instruct a Zumba class, and oh, I was sweating that because I'm not coordinated. So it was like this totally embarrassing scene, and yay, they didn't show it. But no, we had a lot of fun. I mean, I had a great time. My family had a great time. And a cool side effect, Brett, of everything was that my kids learned so much. So the basic unschooling philosophy is that children learn through life when it's something that they love doing. And my kids really loved the process. They were letting Devin learn about the equipment. You know, when they weren't filming, Devin was holding these 35-pound cameras. We learned how a TV show was made. We got to experience and learn more than most people could ever imagine through doing that show. So it gave my kids a huge range of knowledge about things that they didn't know about before.
That's great. And it also seems like it might have given them another opportunity to have some empathy for children who live in the mainstream when they saw what the parenting. I mean, I don't know how foreign that is to them. I don't know if they have friends who, you know, go to public school. Certainly, I'm guessing you don't probably associate with too many families that run like the San Diego family, but their exposure to that woman's rules and household management, I would think would be an opportunity for them to, you know, kind of feel for what so many people, like we're talking well over 90% of all young people in the country are exposed to, if not so much through a strict family, but certainly in school, which is not much different than that regimentation.
Right. And it did give them that insight. My son, Orion, who's 5, really didn't interact at all with her much here. Mm-hmm. According to my husband, he pretty much did his own thing, played with his Trucks and Dinosaurs and used his iPad and played Minecraft and did his usual stuff. So he didn't really have the interaction. My older two kids did not like her at all. And they found her, like, the contrast that they experienced through learning about her, they just couldn't even comprehend. Like, why is she being so mean? Like, why did she yell so much? There were things they just didn't understand that they have such a base of knowledge now of the contrasting and parenting. Because philosophically, they've heard me talk about this. We've done shows. But to actually experience it was an awesome thing for them. And They said that our whole family unanimously says that they would do it again. So it was that positive, even though it looked really challenging, and it was at times. You have a whole support of a crew here who are totally behind you. So
it would be interesting. It would be an interesting addition to the show to maybe spend some time exploring where the moms come from, you know, maybe talking about their own parenting a little bit, which I think would really add a valuable second layer to that. Because when I was watching that woman's interactions, you know, I felt bad for her, especially at the sit down at the end where she, you know, unfortunately immediately becomes belligerent and you know, bullying your husband. It seems like there was such a resistance to any criticism or questioning of those routines at all. And it just made me think, like, maybe one of the reasons why people, I mean, you would know this better than me, maybe one of the reasons why people are so uncomfortable or knee-jerk critical of the unschooling or home education or natural education philosophy is they realize it makes them look at what they're not doing. It makes it clear to them that they're, for lack of a better description, outsourcing a very, very important responsibility that they have as parents. And at one point you were talking to the husband, Andre, and this line just hit me. You said, it's like you're being half a parent, you know, because you're providing structure and you're funding the operation of this family and whatever, but you're not providing any love to these children. Yeah, that was very difficult.
The cool thing was, like, once he had, like, quote unquote, permission and encouragement to do that, you could tell how much they loved it. Their whole family, like, wanted that and were craving that. But they're told by our culture and by upbringing to hold back so much love because children will manipulate you or take advantage of you. So it's this whole cultural idea that you can be vulnerable and loving and kind to your children, and nothing bad's going to come from that. But yeah, so, you know, demonstrating what we did on the show brings up a lot of deep feelings in people.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of anger, confusion, they're questioning their own upbringing. And I'm willing to stand in that space for people to be critical and judgmental and attacking, because I know that I trigger stuff in people by speaking the way that I do. So I never take it personal. And I think that's why I can keep doing these kind of things, because I don't take it personal. I don't get offended easily. You know, everything's so new right now, Brett. Like, I didn't even know how it was all going to come together, you know? So for me, I'm still processing. Wow. Okay. So that's how it went down. This is the response we're getting. It's incredible. I had no idea. Like, I mean, I knew it would be wonderful because that's kind of like the trust I had for it, but this is amazing. You know, I'm getting tweets from people that I've seen on other Wife Swap shows that are contacting me of how great it, like, I don't even know how to keep up with all this response. I need to outsource some of this responses to people. I need an assistant.
Yes, absolutely. Don't we all?
I know, huh? But no, I really loved it. It was just really great. And I think I'm still processing so much.
Mm. Well, on another note, you just wrapped up the Life Rocks conference, which you also organized, right?
The Life Rocks conference was from April 1st to the 6th. And it's the third year I've done it. It was an amazing conference this year. We had 350 people attend, and it seems to grow every year. We had families from Australia, Sweden, the UK, Canada, Bermuda, from all over the world who came to just celebrate unschooling and respectful, peaceful parenting and freedom. And it was amazing. We had great entertainment and wonderful speakers from all over the world, and it was fabulous. So I was just coming down off the conference high and barely got the conference stuff put away when the Wife Swap episode aired.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to doing nothing for the next week.
What happens at the conference? Like, people come and they showcase what they're doing at home, or how does it work?
Well, we have a schedule for every day, which is really funny because most unschoolers don't live by schedule. So it's kind of out of all of our norm to pick up a schedule and see what's happening at certain times. But it kind of goes back and forth between entertainment, fun, and speakers. So we might have a keynote presentation in the morning. We had this gentleman named Zachary Casares who spoke about free cities and deschooling society. He did a presentation based on Ivan Illich's work. But he runs Free Cities in Guatemala. So he spoke a lot about that. And then it kind of went into different hands-on experiences like duct tape creations. And we had a wildlife center come and show us a bunch of exotic animals. And we have dance parties at night and talent shows. And we had a hypnotist come this year, which was really fun. So it really goes back and forth from learning about unschooling and giving support to the parents that need it. We had a great presentation by my uncle, who actually lives in New York City, on anarchism. He's part of Peace Action in New York City, and we have such a similar philosophy. So to have him come out and speak about that was really great. So it was a really fun-filled week.
And is it all unschoolers, all home educators, or do people come? I would be hoping that these conferences, I know there's other ones around the country. You do one in Texas too, right?
I just took over the Rethinking Everything conference in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. It's my first year in August doing that, so I'm excited about that. And that one's really big. It's like 800 to 900 people generally. So I'm now in the mode of getting that one ready to go, which is great. Yeah, so one thing I really love about this is I really welcome anybody that wants to come attend and learn about it. I had a few college professors from New York City come, and they came to the registration desk and said, every unschooling conference that we asked if we could come to, we were not allowed. It was only for families. So thank you so much for welcoming us in to educate ourselves about unschooling. And they learned so much. And so anybody that wants to come is welcome. We've had people from private schools, college professors, people from all different walks of life come and just learn. So that's what it's all about.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that it's working as outreach too. People can come and have that firsthand experience. As far as outreach is concerned, I feel like there's a lot of I did a live show last night, and I had a 15-year-old. He was a freshman in high school. Actually, he might have been 14. He called in, and he was talking about how he found my show and how he had heard a show that I did a long time ago where I had this boy on named Jack, who I think was like 13, and convinced his parents that he didn't want to go to school anymore and made a plan, and they let him leave school at 13. And it was a really amazing story. And this boy called me last night. He said, that meant a lot to me. I'm really in the same position. My parents would never go for this. So I think that, you know, obviously we have a running start when parents come to us and they're curious and they're interested. But one of the things that I've really struggled with is the kids who come to me and say, how do I talk to my parents about this? Have you ever been confronted with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't even believe you're sharing this with me. Really, I've had so many teens contact me really recently too, just saying, asking me the same thing. How do we approach this with our parents? And because they feel understood by you, by your work and by what you do. And it's a challenging place to be in, to be able to help teens. Actually, my son's girlfriend even would love a lot more freedom. She's traditionally homeschooled, but would really love to be treated with more respect and trust. And it's a challenging place. What do you usually recommend when a teen calls you?
Well, it depends. Like, usually they, like, I'll just, I can work with this conversation that we had last night. Student was a public school student. Boy was a real overachiever. He was listing all these clubs that he was in, and he's this, he also teaches the piano, and he wants to do good in school because he feels like he needed to go to college, to piano college. I know that has probably a different name than piano college, but that's how I'm summing it up. You know, a four-year school that would be, by his estimation, $70,000-$80,000. And it seemed like the conversation as far as what to do next was stopped by, he acknowledged everything that I'm saying on the podcast really resonates with him, but he feels like he should finish school. So is it a situation where the kid says, yeah, I want to do this, like Jack, the boy I talked to a couple of years ago, and I'm going to make a plan and I'm going to present it to my parents? Or is the person still in a situation where they're saying, this is not realistic? So it either would start at the place where, you know, I want them to believe that it's realistic. And I think that, you know, there's all kinds of different situations. Like, I think one of your kids, not that I would never want to see this happen, but if you had a child in that environment, up until the age of, say, 12. It's kind of just an arbitrary number. And then they went to public school. I know people who've done that. And the programming of public school, it really doesn't sink in. They're just kind of like, yeah, this is weird that people accept being treated like this. But they're kind of immune to it by that point, because in those formative years, they were respected as learners and as individuals. So, yeah, it's very hard to come up with real concrete advice, because everyone's situations are so different. Their motivation to do it, their desire to do it, their fear of not pursuing a traditional path, the attitudes of their parents. So, I mean, I guess I would just be looking for a place to start. I was trying to talk him out of some of his extracurriculars so he could reclaim some free time in his life to pursue the things that he wanted to do, or at the very least have a little time to himself. So this was starting from a more a difficult situation than I would be with most people, I think.
Yeah, what I'm finding so interesting in this whole awareness is that when we were in school, I don't know about you, Brett, but when I was in school, I didn't know about this as an option. So, yeah, I mean, you suffer to a degree. You feel some kind of level of unjustness and unfairness and mistreatment, but it's hard to really articulate or process it in the way that kids now, I mean, even letting this son know that I was with, that this was an option, is all of a sudden making all these kids aware in our culture of like how unjust, like they truly feel pain and abuse on a level that's new for our culture. So, I'm finding that challenging. I've worked with a boy who was 15 recently through the phone calls and just trying to help him out and encouraging him to write to his parents. His parents weren't hearing him, so he sent me a letter he sent to them and said, does this sound good? And I really wanted him to be able to come from his heart and speak to them. And they were really receptive to it. So it's kind of getting to know what these teens, their relationship is like with their parents, and giving them information. I know Grace Llewellyn's book, The Teenage Liberation Handbook, is a great resource. I like to recommend that to teens to read to empower them. And so, yeah, it's really unique. I wish I could help more teens. It's definitely a passion of mine.
Yeah, it was interesting. Just back to the show, when you tried to have that conversation initially with Andre, the husband in San Diego, and he referred to your effort to make a connection with him and with the children as, I think he said, a kumbaya moment, right? And it's just so the roadblocks that are set up by what most people come to believe parenting is and what parenting needs to be, a very difficult and often seemingly insurmountable challenge. My presentation on my podcast is an easy sell, that school sucks. That thesis is something that people who are young can buy into very quickly. And even older people who might, you know, on the surface support public education, I think a lot of them deep down know that it was a negative experience for them as well. So, that obstacle of what the mainstream conception of what parenting is supposed to be. There's all these cliches like, we're not our kids' friends. And that was something that I think Andre said several times. And there is, you're right. There's that real fear of permissiveness that seems to go back to, gosh, the book of Genesis, if not before, that people are born these evil creatures and they need benevolent but strict and ever-present authority to make them good, to mold them into being good. It's certainly, once it left religion in the Far East and in, you know, the Judeo-Christian tradition, it certainly showed up in academia and behaviorism and ultimately, public schools. So we're certainly surrounded by it.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying is so true, because one thing I tell parents that I'm working with is that, you know, we were raised as kids and everybody assumed negative intent from us, and everything was approached from that perspective. And one thing to be an unschooling parent, I think, is to start to assume positive intent, not just from your kids, but from people around you. It's a really optimistic way of being. And when you assume positive intent, and I know that my kids are born into this world good people. They don't need to be molded or trained into being good. They're just naturally, their default by nature is good. And so that's a completely different way to live altogether. And there was a really big contrast with that with the family that I swapped with.
Mm, yeah, it seemed like there was a total absence of trust, right? Like the default position was I do not trust you. The woman said at one point, I want to know that they're not in their room making bombs.
I know. It was really sad that the kids weren't allowed to shut their bedroom doors. There was so much freedom that was being, that was really hard for me to see. So they were very happy when it was my rules and I said, you can shut your bedroom door. They were thrilled with that privacy.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like, I think that people really should understand that that is, maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm wondering how common that type of parenting is today.
I don't know. You know, I surround myself with people that respect kids. And so my reality really is just that times are changing, things are hopeful, kids are respected. So it was a real shock for me in my own experience to go see that and even ask myself, how common is this? Is this the total extreme or is this the norm? It was a lot to process for sure.
People are going to be listening to the audio version of this, by the way. Dana, you're on an iPad, right? And you're kind of walking around, and there's a couple times where I've wanted to stop and say, what was that? What was that? I saw a shield on the wall. I find this very interesting.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know. Oh, okay. I'm in Devin's room. So I didn't know you were recording the video, but you're not going to show the
no,
video, right?
Because no.
I'm like making really funny faces in here, biting my lip and thinking, because I do that when I think. So I'm in Devin's room, and his room is wallpapered with maps.
Oh, that is awesome.
Isn't that so cool? And they're all, a lot of them are really old.
Can you hold
maps?
It there just so I could actually screenshot that? Because that is sure. So cool. All right. That is awesome. Well, I want my walls to look like that. I want the space behind me to look like that. That's very cool.
But you know what's cool about it? That people don't really understand about unschooling. They think your kids aren't ever surrounded with anything that they could learn from. They think it's anti-school. But Devin loves history, loves maps, and he's learned so much just through total immersion, through being surrounded with these things. So learning is exciting and fun for him. And so he's always striving to learn more about. So his room is really representative of that.
That is really cool.
He's studying a lot of stuff about rocks right now. So he has a bunch of different rocks down here. And he has a Himalayan pink salt lamp, which he studied and learned about it being really healthy on some level. He's a very health conscious kid, but he's also really into weapons. So here's some cool weapons.
Yeah, it was the shield that first caught my attention. Very cool.
Yeah, they made us. We had to get rid of all these for the show filming, liability wise. We didn't have any weapons hanging around. So Devin was a little bummed, but he was totally understood. So we brought all the weapons up to Joe's parents. And
we're looking at two pairs of nunchucks and some kind of battle axe.
Yeah, some kind of battle axe. And he has a didgeridoo right here. He plays the didgeridoo. We've been to Australia 3 times speaking about unschooling. So he actually learned how to play over there, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, I can see the top of it.
Yeah, and he's also, he picked up fire twirling over there. So he's like a professional fire twirler now. He performs and teaches other people how to twirl fire, and that's something he loves to do.
I thought I saw something that looked like a big, like, television studio light, too, but...
You know, it was a light for when we were going to, you're going to be seeing me on Skype. I just wanted to be able to have enough lighting in here. My husband's a photographer and filmmaker, so...
Oh, wow, beautiful.
He's actually making a documentary about unschooling right now. Joe is. So maybe you could be interviewed for it. You'd be perfect.
I would love that. I need to think about, I really need to immerse myself more in the home education unschooling community, because I would want to be more of a resource to say positive things about that world and less of a resource to say negative things about school. Like, that gets tiring.
It's a fine line to walk, and I'm sure you get probably just as much criticism about the title of your show as I do about calling something radical unschooling. People think it's really negative, but you know what? This is the place that a lot of us have to be to really get the people on board. So I know what you're saying, but I'm always happy to. We live in New Hampshire together. Why haven't we hung out before?
There was actually, we were planning. You know, Kate Baker. She's been on my show a bunch of times.
Yeah, actually, I was a. We met through La Leche League, which is like a breastfeeding support group. And we were both part of it like 12 years ago. And we met at like a retreat of some sort. I really liked her.
Yeah. So she said, well, what we're going to do, this was almost 3 years ago. She said, we're going to get in my car with some cameras and we're going to go up to Dana Martin's house and we're going to spend a day and film it. And we'll ask Dana. I'll connect with her. And I bet she would love that. And unfortunately, it just never happened.
Well, it wasn't meant to be, I guess, until now. So everything's lined up perfectly at this point, I guess.
I would love to. What's the angle of the documentary?
He's just sharing about alternative education and parenting in general. He interviewed a lot of families at the Life Rocks conference about unschooling and what drew them to it. And people have so many misconceptions about people walking this path. And the truth is, this is becoming more and more mainstream. And I think that's really hard for some of the unschooling community, because a lot of people want to keep this type of thing grassroots. So it's amazing what's happening right now in our culture. The people that are contacting me, I have doctors, lawyers that I work with, these people that are quote unquote really educated, well-respected members of society who are now unschooling their kids. So it's not just a bunch of like hippie radicals anymore. These are people that are getting it. So many teachers are unschooling. And so he interviewed just a lot of different people. We're showing the different backgrounds and how people come to this life. But I think you'd have a lot
to offer. That would be great. When you talk about this being grassroots or people wanting to keep it grassroots, have you dealt with like that kind of criticism? I know I was talking to another unschooling parent who was pretty public, like did a radio show. And she was saying, yeah, I'm getting a lot of pressure from people who want to keep this a secret. They don't want me drawing attention to what we're doing, because there's some fear that that's going to inevitably lead to this crackdown, which I don't think is even possible. I don't even think there's the resources to do something like that in a you know, comprehensive, organized way. So I don't think that's an unrealistic fear. But has anyone ever presented that idea to you? Like, hey, shh.
Yeah, a lot of people are really fearful of there being more legislation if somebody's out there public. I don't have those fears. Again, you can either go through this as an advocate with trust and just moving forward, or fear. And my overall, you know, family lifestyle and just personal philosophy is trust. And I'm not fearful of that. We've moved so far from that. It's just a fear-based kind of perspective. And a lot of people really like to be different and radical. And when you're making something mainstream, they don't like it. They want to be special. they want to be fringe. A lot of people really enjoy that about radical unschooling, is they like that it's fringe and not mainstream. So I joke around about the fact that once it's more mainstream, then people will be starting to put their kids in school, because that'll be fringe. But that'll be a while before that happens.
Yeah, my live show co-host and I just went down, a couple months ago, we went down to the Sudbury School to check that out. And it did seem, that was one of the conclusions we came to, is that it did just have this appeal of being kind of maybe trendy and out of the mainstream. And hey, if it gets people to the right places, like I'm not 100% supporter of what goes on at Sudbury for a number of reasons, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And if people's desire to, you know, be trendy, it like starts to open their eyes to new things, I think that's great. And I think that, you know, you're certainly doing a very effective job as an advocate getting out there. You've gotten a lot of attention in the last couple of years, so it's very exciting. And I'm enthusiastic about what could happen next. So
I'm so honored to, like, I never expected to do this again. I'm so happy that people are learning more about the rights and respect that kids deserve. To me, this is just about children's rights. And it happened, you know, 12 or 14 years ago. I can't believe Devin's 14, my oldest. But anyway, when he was born, within minutes of his birth, I saw Columbine happening live on the television in the hospital. And it is what started everything for me. It's when I literally was holding my son, who I had just given birth to, which was a profound experience in itself. And I'm watching, I couldn't believe it was happening live. And I'm watching children die and parents crying because they're losing their kids. And I'll tell you, it was at that moment I said, children deserve more rights and freedom in their choice of whether to attend school or not. And that's what just started everything for me. So the fact that Devin was born on Columbine, you know, it's a really powerful moment in my life. So ever since then, my mission in life has been to help as many kids as I can, as many teens, kids, parents realize their power, and that you don't need to institutionalize your kids. In fact, it's so damaging. There's so many choices. That schools are old school. They really are. They're caveman. There is so many better, you know, better ways to learn and grow and live as a family. So to me, it's all about bringing joy and happiness into people's lives.
Absolutely. Have you done a lot of study of nonviolent communication. From the interviews I've heard with you, it seems like it's a language that you speak and you understand. And I'm wondering if that's just from having done this so long.
I don't know. Like, if it just kind of happened naturally, we've always practiced like attachment style parenting, mm-hmm. even before I knew it had a label. So I've always focused on the needs under my kids' like behavior. That's been what's been important to me. I've never studied NBC, nonviolent communication, although I've spoken at conferences where a lot of people do. So maybe it's just that like total immersion learning through other people I'm surrounded with. But I am influenced by a lot of people like Alfie Cohen. He wrote the book Unconditional Parenting. Mm-hmm. John Holt writes about unschooling. You know, you take bits and pieces from so many different people that inspire you that I never had any formal training in it, no.
No, it's interesting because especially the Frieda Bain Collins show, it seemed like some people, NVC is a thing that caught a lot of crap over the last couple of years because people were learning about it and then trying to execute it immediately, and it was kind of awkward. But when I was listening to you talk, I was like, yeah, this is very much that language, but it seemed very natural. Like, it was just, you know, through the family environment, the home that you have, that it was just, you were really fluent in it. And it was nice to hear that.
Thank you. I definitely feel like for me, when I'm advocating or working with a family, I like to talk about being authentic and being yourself. That, I mean, NVC is really scripted for a lot of people. It doesn't flow easily, like in how they educate parents to be. So I like to tell people to let go of all that and just be yourself and communicate honestly and authentically and be who you are. So that's kind of a premise for it for me.
So the two more questions. You have time for two more?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. We got a little bit of a look, for at least I did anyway, taking the iPad around the house a little bit. But what's today like in your household?
We have two friends over that are unschooled. We have a lot of people over our house a lot. Our kids love friends, and we're kind of like the hub of we've just kind of turned into the hub of like a cool place to hang out for unschoolers. So we have a lot of people here a lot. But right now we have two friends over, unschooled kids. And our kids are making up, my daughters are over in our playroom above Joe's shop, making up dances to some music they like. Devin's downstairs. He's sick. He's on the couch. Orion's not feeling well today. After you go to a conference, a lot of times you do come home sick when you're around so many people. So Orion's playing Minecraft. I know Joe's working out in the shop. I'm doing an interview upstairs and let them know that I'm up here doing this. Interviews are really common for me now. I do a lot, maybe one a day. And so we're all just hanging out. My kitchen's pretty trashed right now, I must say. So after I'm off with you, I'm going to clean my kitchen and vacuum and make food for everybody. And so I'm just a basic mom hanging out. And the difference is that it's kind of like what most people do on weekends. Like, everyone's here all the time. We're together 24 hours a day, pretty much. We're all just kind of living side by side doing what we love. So my role is pretty hands-on. I always say unschooling's not for the lazy parent. Actually, this is nice. I'm sitting. I love interviews because I can sit. But I'm usually like looking things up on the computer for somebody and then helping somebody else thread a needle for a craft they're doing and then taking care of the pets at the same time. So it's a really busy life, but it's easy because it's joyful. And, you know, it's not fun to control and punish people all day. So that's why parenting in general has such a bad rap. Is we're told in our culture that you have to train your kids and you have to coerce them and control them and punish them throughout the day. And that is not a pleasant existence. So when you're living in a partnership parenting paradigm, which is what we're doing, it's really based on joy and feeling good and having fun and pursuing what everybody loves doing. So it might sound busy, but I love every second of it.
No, I think that there's also this misconception that unschooling is this unparenting. And it's the opposite of that. Sending your kids off to 35 hours a week of school, I think, is, you know, I understand that it's a reality. And I don't want to be demeaning for people who have to do that. I know there's a lot of people who just find themselves in difficult situations, or their learning came too late and the schooling is just a reality. That maybe they're trying to correct, or maybe they're trying to work their way out of. But yeah, I picture you, when I see these pictures of your family and these four kids that are different ages doing different things, I just picture you being very, very busy and having your hands in a lot of different things all at once. I couldn't ask you what's a typical day like. So I figured, what's today like?
Yeah, today we're all just, I think, relaxing. We were up so late till about 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, chatting, phone calls about the show. So today's probably not typical in that sense. But yeah, we just live like most people do on weekends or on summer vacation. I know it's a weird comparison because every day is different. But one thing that we love to do is travel. Like, I feel like traveling with your kids is such a great way for them to learn and grow. And so travel is really important to our family. Even if we're in a position where we don't have a lot of money that month, we'll just even, you know, go on what they call a staycation and go travel in parts of New Hampshire we've never seen and experienced. So I love the flow of our life. It's really great. So yeah, that's pretty much what we do. Right now, Devin's really into being outside a lot. Like, it's funny because he was really into this video game Minecraft for like a year. Like, he loved it. He lived and breathed Minecraft, and we supported that passion so much that we brought him all the way to Las wow. Vegas to meet the creator of the game. Not Sweden. We brought him to Minecon. So, I mean, we don't value certain interests as having more value than others with our children. We value and respect and will facilitate learning based on the passion for a video game or if it's Egyptian history. So we did that. But now, you know, he was into that for a year. And then all of a sudden he was just like, I'm done with the video game thing. And he's outside like almost all day long building survival shelters. And right now he's making homemade dyes out of plant items and dyeing clothes and making clothes. He just made himself a pair of pants. I mean, it blows my mind how when children are given the freedom and respect and tools and resources, what they're capable of. So if your child's really into video games right now, I'm just telling you from experience that trust it, ride it out, because things shift quick living a life like this.
That's so great to hear. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I hope I can eventually get up there and we can do more work together. There's no reason why we shouldn't be.
Well, really, I'm so happy we connected because I never formed any opinion, really. But, you know, school sucks. That's a pretty hardcore title. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I used to write it on my notebooks every day. But I just assumed that your energy was like really, really anti-school and kind of angry. And I shouldn't have made that assumption, because now talking to you, I feel like, oh, my God, we have so much in common. Like, people feel that way about radical unschooling. They think it's so negative and it's anti-school. But come to find out, we both have pretty hardcore titles for what we do, but mm-hmm. we're really similar. Like, we're really open and respectful of where people are at. So that's cool.
Yeah, I was saying on the Free Domain show that, you know, the easiest thing to be in the world is a hater. You know, read YouTube comments if you don't believe me.
no.
And I often find myself like going in that direction if I'm not careful, because it just seems like, especially when we're doing live radio and I'm just trying to fill dead air with the sound of my voice, like the immediate impulse, even for me still, is to go to that negative place. And yeah, the title of the show was meant to be provocative and to attract young people's interest and use school as an entry point to this larger philosophy that most of the show is really about. We talk a lot about economics. We talk a lot about politics and society. But school is an easy, like for a teenager, this is a pretty non-controversial entry point into a broader spectrum of ideas. So yeah, I have to challenge myself and to check myself regularly to be more positive, because when we're talking, when we're immersed in this political world or mainstream compulsory education world, it's very easy to go to negative places. So
sometimes it feels good. Like, sometimes it does feel good to be on certain shows where I can be that side of me.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of the political stuff I've done lately, you know, with Stefan's work and just like Adam vs. the Man and all these different shows I had never even heard of before that wanted me on. I kind of like being able to be that, like sharing why institutionalizing kids is so wrong and painful and abusive. So I'm multifaceted. Like, I don't mind doing that. However, I think my default advocacy is pretty kind and respectful and not necessarily anti. I'm more for what I'm more for what I stand for than for what I'm against. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's an important question for people to ask themselves. And a question that I definitely had to deal with in my career of doing this. Am I more strong on the advocacy side? Yeah, I think that's really important. So we definitely need to work together again. You could host a live show. We were saying before we started that we might be hosting an upcoming Free Domain call-in show together.
Michael just sent me a email yesterday asking if I would be interested. I think the 21st of April it was. Is that a Sunday? He asked if I would host it with you. So I don't know if he was waiting to hear from me and before he asked you, but I just sent him an email back this morning saying, yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great. So I can see we have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Really sure. I do a live show at least once a week. I'm thinking about adding some more to that. So maybe sometime we can do that format and we could take some calls. And gosh, I would love to find some people who disagree with me so I can politely conversate with them. But they're hard to find. I know they're out there. I know they're like 95% of the population. But
dude, I'll hook you up. I got plenty of those after your wife's swap.
Just start sending them my way, saying this guy.
I love all of you.
This yeah. guy wants to have you on, have a conversation with you on his podcast. All right. So what's your site, and what would you like my audience to know about as far as your activities right now?
I have a website, danamartin.com, but it's danamartin.com. And I have a bunch of videos and articles about unschooling philosophy and parenting in general. A bunch of my interviews and stuff are on there, too. I would just like people to know that I also offer like unschooling and parenting coaching calls. And I'm also known as the unnanny. People hire me to go into their homes and work with them. Just like, I don't know if you've ever heard of or seen the shows like Nanny 911 and Super Nanny.
Yes.
I do the exact same thing. But I go into people's homes explaining freedom and partnership and respecting children. So it's been wildly successful. I have actually a wait to go into people's homes. So balancing, hey, I have four kids. I'm a full-time mom. That's my first and foremost important role. So balancing that around kind of the demand for people that want to learn about this, it's been a fun challenge.
That should be our next conversation. I think that was a whole area that we didn't explore.
Sure.
The super nanny. Yeah. All right.
I know. Isn't it just boil? Yes. It's not. Yeah. I can't even go there. If we start this conversation, we're never going to end the show.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. This was really, really great. And I will put links to your stuff in my show notes. And we will definitely have to connect again soon, Dana Martin. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, hey, everybody. This is Brett. You might remember me from past episodes of School Sucks podcast, such as the memorable show number 208, Whole Parents with Dana Martin. As you know, School Sucks is a listener-supported project, and you might be saying right now, oh, I'm a listener. Well, then this upcoming message is for you. We ask people to join our AV Club, the bonus content section at SchoolSucksProject.com, which supports the show and helps us continue to grow, but also gets you access to a huge collection of additional content that has never been released in the podcast feed, audio and video, AV. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV will take you to the page to sign up, but one of the things that I've been doing on the show recently is offering regular podcast listeners a preview of what exists in this section. So there are 11 different categories in the AV Club of different types of media, and I've been going through them one by one, and now we have come to unreleased live shows. So here is a clip of the School Sucks Liberty Conspiracy live show from March 29th, 2012. This is hour one. It is me, Osborne, and Dale from Flaming Freedom. Back in the winter and spring of 2012, we filled in for Gardner Goldsmith on his show a bunch of times, and those are all in this section, unreleased live shows. They were never released anywhere else. We're talking about the History Channel, the de-evolution of the History Channel, and then as our conversation goes on in this 10-minute clip, we realize how tempting such a de-evolution can be. So I hope you enjoy this, and I hope you sign up, schoolsucksproject.com/AV. And we were talking about 1984 being read in school, and I said that the History Channel used to have content on about Hitler all the time, just like 1984 used to be read in schools, maybe when there wasn't such a strong connection between that story or the Nazi Germany in the 1930s with America today. And it seems like the schools have shied away from 1984 and Animal Farm and Brave New World, and the History Channel has shied away from history. Well, I think that I jumped to a conclusion there. As I started to think about it more, I can't really say that there is some kind of anti-intellectual conspiracy that the History Channel is a direct part of. But I think this is a subject worth exploring. Have you guys watched the History Channel in the last, say, 4 or 5 years?
Anything I've seen on it has just been a joke.
A joke?
I've seen, I mean, don't they do like ghost stories now? And it was ratings, it was jumping the shark, basically. It sounds like it has jumped the shark and that it's doing things about ghosts and aliens and a bunch of things that really have nothing to do with history.
That's one of their shows, actually, Jump the Shark Wars. Oh, it's called.
Is it somehow related to how, you know, MTV used to have music and now it doesn't?
Is it possible that it's just a ratings thing, that people just were not watching the History Channel when it was actually educational?
Well, I think it was popular then, but I don't know if it was entirely in a move to boost ratings, like to compete with other channels, as much as it was a response. And I think I take your MTV point, because like when I first turned on MTV, when they went live in 1982, there I was, 4 years old, sitting by the computer, or the hell is a computer in 1982?
Tandy 300?
Yeah. So I'm sitting by the TV waiting for MTV to come on. None of this story is true. But, and the first video is Video Killed the Radio Star. And I said, it can only go up from here as far as the quality of the content.
And you were
concerned.
Wrong.
I was wrong. That was the top. I always talk on my show about the wonders of the internet and what a terrific tool of enlightenment the internet has been over the course of the last 15, I mean, we're approaching 20 years of it now. But I think for some of us, it has been that. And for others, it's just been the, like an accelerant of the dumbing
the
down.
The internet,
right?
It's just for like, porn.
Yeah, it's like, no, but it's like a faster way to get dumber. If we, yeah. And so
I think it's creating an ADHD culture, don't you think? Of just sort of not being able to focus on a subject.
And we all remember, I think, the History Channel in the beginning, very heavy on World War II stuff. A lot of Hitler, a lot of Nazis, a lot of Germany. Do you remember? We all remember.
I wonder if it was just too depressing for the viewers.
But the History Channel has devolved into this weird, like UFOs, aliens, ghosts, monsters. And like I was saying, I think this is just they are responding to a demand. I think that the rest of television is so dumbed down that this is what they want. Thoughts?
Could be. I had another theory that I was just thinking of.
Okay.
So you know how in companies, right, when personnel changes,
sure,
like a new manager comes in,
yeah,
they're always looking for ways to change up what's going on to make their mark, make it look like they did something, they accomplished some great feat.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You see this all. They're firing vendors. They're bringing in new people, changing policies and whatnot. Maybe that's something that has occurred over time. You know, one guy came in and said, we need to have aliens. And then the next guy came in a couple of years later and said, you know what? Now we're going to have ghosts. It's just kind of like an escalation of ridiculousness.
Well, aliens, frankly, folks, aliens are far more real than ghosts. Potentially. I mean, in
right,
potentially.
Sure.
You know? Like
there's some pretty good studies done that there're probably some out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But whether they're visiting us is a whole other very big complicated issue.
Yeah. Sure. And I think
From the vastness of space, there's probably some out there somewhere.
Yeah,
they might be more primitive than us.
That's possible.
Yeah. We might get to them before they get to us.
And they could be way more advanced than us.
Wouldn't they have to be if they came to visit us?
In some ways they could.
Unless they evolve some kind of psychic projection or something.
I think that if aliens could come here,
We've just done what the History Channel did.
Yeah, we did. We devolved in one segment.
The History Channel talking about things that aren't history anymore is just kind of boring. Let's talk about aliens.
Right. No, but Carl Sagan actually tried to do a more probability analysis of this, like looking at how many galaxies he understood them there to be, how many stars were in those galaxies, what are the odds of stars similar to the sun. And, you know, what are the odds of a non-gaseous planet orbiting one of those? And what would be the chances that that planet would have the conditions, would be the proper distance from the star for life? And I think he came up with like 50 billion different places in the universe.
Wow.
But how theoretical is that?
One thing I know for sure is that the universe is vast beyond what our minds can even begin to grasp.
Yeah. This is something that's beyond human comprehension.
But the thought that there's not any other life anywhere in the universe is, I think, almost absurd.
Yeah.
But whether it's visiting us is a much bigger question, because there is a lot of space to traverse. And we don't know that we aren't even close to moving at the speed of light. And even if we were, it would take us a really long time to get to where, you know, where they are. Figure out where they are is another complication.
Right.
Getting there in any reasonable time frame is a, yet another complication.
It would have to be wormholes. We'd have to have some kind of Farscape scenario where people can go through wormholes.
Yeah. So there's a lot. There are a lot of problems to tackle for two different lives to connect.
Yeah, I think the closest
different life forms or whatever.
With our current technology, the closest star is 8 human generations away. So in other words, people would have to go
at light speed. You mean?
No. No, I think it would be more than that, because that 8 generations. So that's like we're talking 250 years. The closest star is 6 trillion miles away. So it's about 24 trillion miles away, 4 light years away,
which is pretty far.
So 4 years at the speed of light, maybe 250 years by, our current technology. So
right now, if we had a way to go into stasis or something, but even then, it would take a long time. And
or you just put a man astronaut and a woman astronaut. On now, imagine, I probably want more than 2 because 7 generations later, they're probably going to be pretty thick. You can't inbreed 7 generations in space.
Getting all ahead of medieval on us here.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is like, let's say they have a means of traveling really fast. Let's say at light speed.
Sure.
Or darn close to it. I don't think you can go at light speed unless you're light. So they go really, really fast and they have a way to go into stasis and they've figured out where we are. Well, think about just it's not that far back before we started sending signals out into space. Something to track us by. And so they might be on their way here and still not here yet.
It's a fascinating subject.
I also am of the mind that we will achieve near immortality before we achieve space travel.
Yeah.
I think we'll be cyborgs by then. At the least, we'll be merging with the machines or completely mechanical by then.
Now,
at that point, a lot of the problems of space travel will be resolved. We'll be able to live 250 years to travel somewhere and we'll probably have virtual worlds on the spaceship where we all that stuff. But that'll be all minor by the time we're able to do wormholes or travel near the speed of light or whatever it is. So it'll resolve a lot of the problems. We won't have to pack food.
Do you want to be a cyborg?
Well, it's versus being dead. Yeah, I guess so.
How about you?
We'll be able to simulate everything that we have right now.
Yeah, I'll take that.
We'll be able to simulate organic experiences and all for the most part.
So you guys would say that you'd be interested in eternal life.
I don't think that there would be eternal life, and I'm not sure that I would. I think there's some argument that you could kind of go crazy living forever.
Well, sure, eternal in human concepts, which means that
but much longer than what we're living right now.
Somebody say meteorological for me, please, because I cannot say it.
meteorological
event. Then everyone would die anyway, or the sun burning up. Like obviously, life is finite. So in its present physical form.
I think by the time the sun burns up, we'll be moving on. We will have moved on.
All right. Folks, you're listening to Coast Radio. Our sponsor is Magic Healing Crystals. So check them out. And we'll be right back.